Well, we're working our way back to you. We'll be back in a moment with our guest, Patrick Caron, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Patrick Caron. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. Don't call now. You're calling. We're not going to answer the phone yet. Patrick, let's get back. Also, let me ask you, when you say that they may be released soon, those who are being hidden away down there, whereabouts are they? I mean, is it on this planet someplace, or are we talking about in another dimension?
No, I believe it's on this planet. It's a subterranean prison. I don't know. Maybe it's down in the middle of the earth. We're told of one time in the epistle to the Ephesians, it says that the Messiah in his risen body, it said, what is it first, but he descended into the lower parts of the earth. Now, that's not talking about him being buried, because he was buried in a tomb, which was on the side of a cave. So he went, it's down underneath our feet somewhere. It's down there somewhere, George. And they're going to be released. In Revelation chapter 9, we're told that these guys are going to be released again.
Okay, onward to the pyramids for a moment. Now, when you talk in your theories that you believe the pyramids were constructed way before the flood, let's talk about the reason for this. Why do you think they built these?
Okay, well, this is jumping to the back of the book of Revelation and to the very, very second last chapter. Because in the second last chapter, as you know, the book of Revelation, it's the last book in the Bible. It's the one that is still future and that has not yet been fulfilled. The word apocalypse comes from the Greek apokalypsis, which means unveiling, as in the taking of a veil away from the face to reveal the face, or like pulling back the curtains on a stage to reveal what's behind the curtains. And this is what the book of Revelation does. It's showing us what's coming down the tracks. And it's not a very good sight. It's not a very pretty sight. But the good news is you don't have to be there. You don't have to be part of it. There's a way out. There's an escape route. And because it goes through the whole book of Revelation, it talks about three sets of judgments, seven each. It says the seven trumpets, seven vials,
right,
seven sealed trumpets, which are going to be poured out in the future, which ends up in a valley in northern Israel called the Valley of Megiddo. We can come to that in a few minutes.
And isn't that in a chronology? There's a time limit for each?
Some people say that these are three separate judgments. Some people say they run together. I'm not sure. I'm going to hit on a couple of them in the future, and especially the last one, because the seventh trumpet, the seventh seal, and the seventh vial are all exactly the same. And they come to the same conclusion. But I'll come to that in a few minutes, George.
Okay, okay.
To get back to the pyramid thing.
Please.
In chapter 21 of the book of Revelation, it talks about the next heaven and the next earth, the one that's coming in the future. And this is, you know, after all this stuff has been done away with, after the apocalypse, it talks about 1,000 years of the Messiah reigning on earth, sort of paradise regained for 1,000 years. Then it talks about another rebellion at the end of that. And then it says this earth and this cosmos and the whole lot is going to be burned up and the stars are going to be rolled up. It talks about a new heaven and a new earth. And in this new earth, it describes this city coming down out of heaven from God and descending on this new earth. It's called the New Jerusalem. You probably heard that song.
Sure.
Jerusalem. That's what it's talking about. And in the 21st chapter of the book of Revelation, it gives a detailed, lengthy description of this future city. It tells us all the different stones it's made out of. It tells us the thickness of the walls. It says it's got 12 gates made out of a single pearl each. It talks about the river of life flowing out from the midst of this and the tree of life, which are planted along this river for the healing of the nations. It's an incredible description. You'll read it in chapter 21. But at the end of this long description, we're given the dimensions of this future city, and we're told its length and its breadth and its height are the same. That is a pyramid in shape.
Ah.
Furthermore, when you work out the length of it, we're given the length, it works out at about 1,500 miles long, 1,500 miles wide, and 1,500 miles high. Now, let's backtrack a little bit. You will have heard the expression where the Messiah said once, in my Father's house are many mansions.
Yes, I remember.
You've heard that.
Yes.
He said, in my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. So he spoke about going to this house in the heavens. He said he was going up to prepare a place for us and that he would come again, take us and bring us to this place. So he's up there now with his sleeves rolled up. He's mixing cement, preparing a place for a visitation. Then later on in the book of Hebrews, it talks about Abraham. And it says, Abraham looked for a city in heaven whose builder and maker was God. Then Paul in Corinthians says we have an eternal house in the heavens whose architect was God and it was not made by human hands. Two other times at the end of the Hebrews, the epistle to the Hebrews, it talks about a city in another country and in another place called heaven, the celestial city, literal celestial city out there somewhere,
see,
wherein
it
abides.
You could interpret it also, though, as a massive mother spaceship.
Well, you could call it that if you want, George. All I'm saying is the Messiah said he was going to this place.
It says right.
He's up there now sitting on the right hand of this guy called Yahweh, who's his father, surrounded by these 24 other men called 24 elders. We don't know who they are. They're probably the guys when they said, let us make man in our image. That's who they were talking about. And an innumerable amount of these spirit men, we call them angels. So this is where the Messiah went to. And then in Revelation chapter 3, it talks about this heavenly Jerusalem called Mount Zion, which is going to descend out of heaven in the future. So when the Messiah said he was going to this place, this is what he's talking about. There's a huge pyramid city out there in a place called we call heaven. It says he's in another country, so there must have a physical dimension to it because it's all made out of stones and pearls and various things.
So are you saying that they tried to duplicate it on a smaller scale here?
Yes. And what I'm saying in my book, The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse, is that when the fallen spirit men fell to earth, these part of the rebellious band of nefarious spirit beings, spirit men, under the leadership of this guy called Lucifer, he has a lot of other names, Baal, Beelzebub, the devil, Satan, the prince of power of the air, the prince of this world, etc., etc. And when they fell to earth, way back in the dim, distant past, some 5,500 years ago, they built this incredible pyramid with all the mathematics that it involves, with the incredible engineering feats, with these shafts pointing at four distinct star signs, Draco, Orion, Sirius, and Beta Ursa Minor. And as I say, three of those are associated with gods, with a small g.
Now, you said 5,500 years ago?
So around that time, I believe, because we're told in the book of Enoch that they descended, that the fallen angels came in the days of Jared, the father of Methuselah.
Are you a believer that the physical planet is 6,000 years old, or do you think it's older, but again, all this that you're talking about happened 5,000, 6,000 years ago?
Well, I think my guess is that it happened around, that they were built around 5,500 years ago prior to the flood.
The pyramids,
now,
okay.
In Genesis 1:1, it says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And in verse 2, it says, and the earth became formless and void. So something happened between verse 1 and verse 2. You could have all the millions of years you want between verse 1 and verse 2 and prehistoric time and dinosaurs, etc.
All right.
The earth as we know it is about 6,000 years
ago.
All
right.
But when these guys fell to earth, now as a lot of your listeners will know, are people who have sort of biblical spiritual knowledge, Lucifer or Satan, he always copies or imitates or duplicates or apes what the true God does. So when these nefarious spirit men fell to earth way back then, they built this incredible pyramid, you know, white, smooth, iridescent, gleaming in the morning sun with the gold pyramid on top, with all the mats and the engineering, and they built this as an earthly representation of a celestial reality. They built it, in other words, as a copy of the celestial city they had come from, this new Jerusalem, which is described in detail and the 21st chapter of the book of Revelation, the place where the Messiah said, in my father's house are many mansions, where it says Abraham looked for this celestial city. That's what's out there. This is the extra intelligent life, higher spiritual beings in another dimension. And these guys fell here. They built this incredible pyramid as a replica or a mirror image of the celestial city that is out there.
Why? What was their reason?
I think they built it as a monument to their own pride, their own ego, and their own hubris.
All right.
That's what I believe.
Maybe they were flexing their muscles a little bit, saying, see what we've done. This is our planet now.
Exactly, because this is, remember, the reason that the serpent, that you know, Lucifer fell was because of pride originally. And you're talking about, when it talks about the serpent in Genesis 3, George, you're not talking about a snake or an apple. There's no mention of a snake or an apple. It talks of, the Hebrew for serpent is nakash, which means to hiss, to mutter, to enchant, to charm, or it's translated as a fiery serpent in another place, to be bright shining. So what deceived Adam and Eve back then? It wasn't a snake. You're talking about a glorious spirit being of superior aspect, a beautiful looking man full of wisdom and knowledge, beauty, fascination, with the ability to enchant and to charm. It was to this bright shining angel, this fallen angel, that Eve paid such great deference, not to a snake. And remember, that great line from The Usual Suspects, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was to convince the world that he doesn't exist.
That's true.
But what my book does is when the Messiah was here, he pointed out these two gods. He showed what the good God is, the good guy, and he lifted up the stone, so to speak, and pointed out the snake hiding underneath. You know, at one point he said, the thief comes not but for to steal, to kill, and to destroy. That's what he's out to do.
Do you theorize, Patrick, how they possessed the strength to build these pyramids?
I do indeed, and I give examples in it, and there are many examples in there of this. You're talking about spirit power here. These guys don't need cranes or muscles when you've got spirit power. And there's one example of it in the Old Testament, for instance, when Adam and his brother Aaron went in to the Pharaoh and said, let my people go. And it says that the soothsayers, the prognosticators, the black magic guys that were working for the Pharaoh at that time threw down their staffs, and their staffs turned into serpents, into snakes. And Aaron threw down his staff, and it turned into a snake, and his snake ate up their snakes.
That's right.
That's some spirit power. But in the future, in the book of Revelation, and in these guys that emerge from the abyss in the future, it says, this guy is going to have, we'll talk about him in a minute, we'll get to him now in a minute, it even gives us his name, George. And it says that they're going to deceive the whole population of the world with our lying signs and wonders. And they're going to have such power, it says, that they can even take an image of the beast, or the Antichrist, this future political leader, this beautiful man that the world is going to love. They're going to be able to take an image of him and breathe life into him to where it comes alive. You're talking magic with a capital M. These are powerful spirit beings. So, they don't need cranes, wheels, or anything else. You're talking spirit power. No big deal to them to float 1,000-ton stones around the place.
Or cut it straight out of the limestone, however they may have done it.
However they may have done it, we don't know that. But you're talking major spirit power, I can tell you.
How many of them, Patrick?
Sorry?
How many of them do you think were on the planet at the time?
Well, according to the Book of Enoch, the ones that materialized and came into some sort of manifestation or concretion to have sex with women, he said there was 200 of those guys.
200.
But that's only a fraction, I believe, of the overall number of these spirit men, these beautiful-looking guys. They're beautiful-looking. They're good-looking. You know, I can tell you, I've read a book by one woman who met Satan and had sex with him, and she described him as a very beautiful-looking man, long dark hair, charming, but...
Were there any women, any spirit women here?
Yes, when the original spirit Nephilim fell, it names them. In fact, we might as well get in to talk about this guy out of the abyss now.
Okay.
Because it says in chapter 9 of the book of Revelation that a star falling from heaven and having the key to the bottomless pit, and he opens it and these guys are released. And it says that they had over them the angel of the abyss, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon and in the Greek is Apollyon. This guy is the ruler or judge or the king or the leader of the fallen spirit men. And we're given his name. It says in Hebrew is Abaddon and in Greek is Apollyon, which means the destroyer. And it says he goes to his destruction. He goes on to become what's called the beast out of the abyss, who is actually what we would call the Antichrist, this future political leader that's going to lead the world, end up in Armageddon.
Who may or may not be here now, or do you think he is?
No, he's locked up. He's not released just yet.
Ah, okay.
But Apollyon, George, A-P-O-L-L-Y-O-N, is nothing more than how the Greeks spell what we would call Apollo.
I was going to say that. Okay.
This is Apollo. And as you know, Apollo in Greek mythology was always the epitome of the beauty of man, of music, of poetry, of sport, of prophecy. His oracle was in Delphi. You can see it there, an incredible building. And this is the guy. But Apollo, as I say, is no more than one of the original leaders of the original pantheon of gods, way back there, along with Mars, Mercury, Saturn, Neptune, Zeus, Jupiter. And we had some female entities there too. Athena, Artemis, Hera, Demeter, who are female entities. And we're told in the book of Enoch that these female entities became sirens. And the sirens, as you know, in Greek mythology, were the ones who used to lure the sailors in, and they would get shipwrecked on the rocks. And this might actually tie in with the banshees.
Like mermaids? Like mermaids, I guess.
Mermaids and stuff like that, yeah. And in fact, well, that's another story altogether. But, there's a woman who's mentioned in Isaiah and other places called the Queen of Heaven and the Lady of the Nations. And there's also a woman appearing all over the place to beat the band these days, which a lot of people think is, quote, Mary, the Mother of God. Well, I used to always say that this isn't Mary that's appearing in these places. It's Satan in drag. But now what I'm beginning to think is it's not Satan in drag. It's one of these people, either Diana or Artemis.
Isn't it incredible, though, Patrick, how so many different civilizations, the Greeks with Greek mythology, Hebrew, all over this planet, they all talk about similar things, these gods. I mean, it's astounding to me how they all have little pieces of this puzzle.
Well, it is, because it's all coming from primitive truths and primitive traditions, which, as I said earlier, have their genesis and their basis in truth and fact. You know, the ancient monuments weren't built by primitive man, but by primeval gods of prehistory. Not a bunch of sort of mythological characters, you know, forged from the traditions or legends of archaic religious ritual, but a case of sophisticated, superintelligent, and supernatural beings.
Well, I'll tell you, your theory of the pyramids is as strong as anything I've heard, because there's no doubt in my mind they weren't made by human beings. There's no way, with the kind of technology they were supposed to have, which was nil, that they were able to do that. The stone inside some of those tombs, I mean, it's there's no margin of error there. Nothing.
It's absolutely unbelievable. And as I say, what I believe is that the Great Pyramid of Giza, built some 5,500 years ago, it's pointing future into the future at this future pyramid city, which is described in great detail in chapter 21 of the book of Revelation. And this future pyramid city, the New Jerusalem, which is going to come down out of heaven and land on the new heaven and the new earth, is pointing back at the Great Pyramid of Giza. There's a direct connection between the two. Both of them are pointing at one another. And my book, The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse, is the first book ever showing the connection between these two pyramids. Not just the pyramids of Egypt, by the way, George. There's also pyramids, incredible pyramids, in Mexico, in Guatemala, and other places around the world.
I was going to say, strategically, there were reasons why they built them in these particular spots, right?
Yes, and they all have astronomical alignments, because these fallen spirit men are very closely entwined with astronomy and the zodiac and the signs of the zodiac, because these guys know. I think whatever's going to come in the future, George, is written in the stars too. It's just we've lost the knowledge and we can't piece it together. But these guys know about this stuff and they're watching it. And that's why you'll see, like in Esna and Dendera on the temples there in Egypt, they have the signs of the zodiac. And in fact, one picture, these gods, Mercury, Mars, Saturn, are depicted walking and strolling around the constellations, because this was their former abode. They are called in Scripture the stars of heaven. Stars is another name for angels, and a lot of them have astronomical names linking them with stars, i.e. Lucifer is associated with Venus. Venus is the first, the bright star that you see in the morning. Apollo is a planet, Mars is a planet, Saturn is a planet, Pluto is a planet. They all have astronomical associations as well.
Patrick, when we come back, I have to ask you about your theory about the Nazca lines in Peru. They're incredible, and I want to get your take on it. And then, of course, the apocalypse and the Antichrist. Very important. Lots of people always interested in that, just to see how close we are. And as you said, there's a way out. I want you to show us the way out. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And Patrick Kieran, our guest right here on Coast to Coast. Patrick, the Nazca Lines in Peru. Do they have anything to do with any of this?
Well, absolutely, George. I believe they were all done by the same guys because, again, it wasn't ordinary little peasants running around in little grass skirts out there
carving
these
things
because they're only really discernible from the sky, aren't they?
That's true.
Not just those, but you have the incredible buildings up in Peru, in Sacsayhuaman, in Bolivia, Guatemala. They're all over the place out there.
Well, then they were all over the planet.
Well, they were, yeah. Well, they were knocking around for up to 800, maybe 1,000 years prior to the flood, as I said. And then there was a second eruption of these guys later on, who I believe moved out and moved to these places. And Angkor Wat, Graham Hancock is a very interesting theory in his book, Heaven's Mirror, where he says the word Angkor comes from the Egyptian, the Ankh. You know that sort of a cross that you see the Egyptian
yes.
gods holding in many of the phrases? It's sort of a round thing with something that looks like the crucifix.
Yes.
And it's supposed to be the symbol of eternal life or everlasting life. And he says that's where the Ankh comes from, an Angkor. And the Hor, H-O-R, is the short for Horus. And Horus, as you know, was the falcon-headed god that's depicted all over Egypt.
Oh, it's Horus. It's all over
right?
the place.
Now, so he's saying Angkor Horus lives. Now, Horus may have been one of the second eruption of these fallen angels. And there's an oblique verse in Isaiah which talks about in that day, which is talking about the future, the coming apocalypse. It says, I will bring the bird, the ravenous bird from the east, the man who will fulfill all my willing or something. It talks about a ravenous bird and a man from the east. And it's very peculiar that in places like South America and Mexico, it talks about Quetzalcoatl and Viracocha, who was supposed to be serpent god, and over in
Lord Pakal also.
Yes, and they have Garuda, who was the mythical birdman of the Hindus. And this could tie in with this peculiar verse which talks about a ravenous bird and a man from the east who could be Horus or Quetzalcoatl or Garuda or whoever. And maybe this is where Angkor comes from. Horus lives. Because that's an absolutely incredible building out there in the middle of the forest in Cambodia, which covers an area the same size as London.
Do you believe that they kept coming to this planet, or did they just come at this point and they just merely stopped, inhabited the planet, migrated, went all over the place, but we didn't get any more of them?
I believe there was two eruptions of these fallen spirit men with human women.
The Nephilim.
One before the flood, one after the flood. But, as I said to you earlier, in chapter 9 of the book of Revelation, it talks about this bottomless pit being opened. These guys are released again. They have a king or ruler who goes on to become the Antichrist, who is Apollo. He's named. He's Apollo, and it means the destroyer. And he's also called in Revelation, he's called the beast from the abyss, or the beast from the pit. And Revelation chapter 17, for instance, it says, and here's a very peculiar verse which I could never understand before, and which Hal Lindsey or any of these guys, they never illuminated this before. But it says, the beast which you saw once was, now is not, and will come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction. And the inhabitants of the world, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the creation of the world, will be astonished when they see the beast, because he once was, now is not, and yet will come again. And it says that phrase three different times. Now, the beast which you saw once was. When? Well, back in the days prior to the flood of Noah, for up to 800 years, when Apollo and Mars and Saturn and all the rest, Jupiter and the rest of these guys were knocking around, inflicting their evil and wanton violence on the world at that time. Now is not, because he's locked up in this subterranean prison called Tartarus, or the bottomless pit.
Or hell.
And will come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction, which is in Revelation chapter 9, when he's released again and he goes on and he leads the world into destruction. And as I say, there's going to be a future battle between the devil and his spirit men, which are still not manifested yet, and Michael and his spirit men, and they're cast down because Satan, Lucifer, still has access to the heavenly realms. It says that
where does that put us, though, Patrick, in the middle of all this?
We're in the middle of this whole thing. The whole battle is for the souls of man. And this, the devil, and when they're going to be cast down in the future, George, you've got hell on earth, and you don't want to be there, and you don't have to be there. So maybe you're just... I'd like to talk a little bit about the book of Revelation for a moment,
please.
If I may. Is that
sure
okay?
Thing. Sure. And elaborate on that, too, when you say you don't have to be there. I mean, where are we going to go?
Well, I'll come to that in a moment.
All right.
Maybe you'll have to read the book to find out how we're going to miss the coming apocalypse, because there's a way out. There's a definite way out, which is made available via the Messiah. But let me just set the foundation for the book of Revelation. What we have people don't understand about the scriptures is about a quarter of the scriptures are prophetic. They're telling you things that are going to happen before they do. So the veracity is either borne out by the fulfillment of these prophecies, or if they're not fulfilled, then it's proven false and you can throw it into the drain and read Playboy instead. But there's at least 737 prophecies written in scripture. Some of them are only written once or twice or three times. Others are written hundreds of times. These, over 80% of these have been fulfilled with 100% accuracy thus far. The Messiah, when he was here, he fulfilled at least 109 specific prophecies about himself. In fact, he fulfilled 25 of these in the last 24 hours of his life. Anybody who saw the Passion of the Christ, all those things that happened to him, those 25 of those in one man in one 24-hour period. For instance, it was prophesied he'd be crucified with thieves and robbers, that they would pierce his hand on his side, that they would gamble over his seamless robe, that he would be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver, he'd use the money to buy the potter's field, that the betrayer would commit suicide, etc., etc. Now, these were all written from somewhere from 500 to 1000 BC. And let me just give you one other example of this, George, because it's very important.
All right.
A guy called Grant Jeffrey, an American scholar, he took just 11 of these prophecies written about the Messiah, and he apportioned probability to them. For instance, in Micah 5:2, it said that the Messiah would be born in a little village called Bethlehem. Now, Bethlehem was a Mickey Mouse village in the middle of this backwater in the Roman Empire. There was thousands of villages there. Normally, a king would be born in Jerusalem in the city. So he said, well, there's thousands of these little villages. We'll say Bethlehem 200-1 that he's going to be born there, because that's a high probability. Then he took another one, Zechariah 9:9, which said that the Messiah was going to ride triumphantly into Jerusalem on an ass's colt. Now, again, kings, you know, your majesty doesn't go around riding on an ass. They ride around on a big white steed. So he said, that's very improbable. We'll make that 50-1. So the combined probability of both of those prophecies coming to pass is 200-1 by 50, which is 10,000-1. Now, he took 11 of these and apportioned fairly conservative probabilities to them. And when he worked out the chances of these coming to pass in one man's life, he came up that it would only happen in one chance by 10 billion to the power of 1 billion.
10 billion to the power of 1.
Let me put that in a better term for you. Supposing I gave you this ring off my finger.
Okay.
And I took it up in an airplane and I sailed around the seven oceans of the world, and somewhere I opened the window and I threw it out the window. And I came back and I said, okay, George, there's a boat, there's a fishing rod, off you go. Now, when you feel lucky, you have one chance to let your hook down and locate where that ring
is. It's your ring if you can find it, right?
That is the same probability of just 11 of these prophecies coming to pass in this one man. He fulfilled 109. Now, the book of Revelation are the prophecies of the Messiah. This is what he told us. This is the revelation of the Messiah. It said in verse 1, the revelations of Jesus Christ. He's showing us what's coming down the tubes. So you can put your house on it, or your bottom dollar, that this is absolutely going to come to pass.
And you have no doubts that it's not going to happen. You have no doubts.
Well, when they asked him, a few of his closest friends came to him, and they had a private meeting just before he took off out of here. And they asked him, what will be the signs of the end of this age and of your coming, your parousia, your second coming? And he gave a list of things. I'll briefly tell you what they were. He said, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. Nations shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There'll be an increase in famines, in earthquakes, in diseases, in weird weather, in pestilences all over the place.
One could think, though, Patrick, that's happened since the beginning of time.
I know that, and I knew you were going to say that. But there's one sign that is incontrovertible, and that pertains to the Jews. But just before he said that, he said, the nations will be in perplexity at the roaring and tossing of the sea. Now, we had a good example of that just after Christmas there.
Yes, we
did.
In fact,
in Book of Revelation, one of the trumpets, it says, and the trumpet judgments, which ties in with the seals and the vials, it says, and the second angel sounded, and as it were, a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. Now, all of a sudden, that makes sense. It says a third part of the ships were destroyed. There's a, you probably heard of La Palma, one of the Canary Islands out up the north, northeast coast. The scientists say it's not a matter of if this thing is going to blow, it's a matter of when.
This is the one that could take out the entire eastern seaboard of the United States.
Absolutely. They say when this goes, it could cause a tsunami 500 feet tall, which would travel at the speed of a passenger jet. And when it hits, take about 9 hours to hit the east coast of America, not to mention, you know, the Gulf of Mexico, Europe, and Africa. It could be anything from 25 to 60 yards high.
And go in 25 to 50 miles inshore, for example.
Yes. And now when it says this, the second angel sounded, and as it were, a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and a third part of the ships were destroyed. All of a sudden, that particular prophecy looks very, very, very relevant. But there's one other prophecy with regard to the end times and the signs of the end times, and that's to do with the Jews, George.
All right, well, let me ask you this real quick, though. Could it also have been making reference to Atlantis, by any chance?
In what way?
Well, I mean, Atlantis sank, assuming there was an Atlantis. I believe there was. Maybe there was a huge mountain that was fiery. Maybe it went under. They had boats. Maybe a third of their boats went under immediately, and some of them escaped.
There's only one problem with this. This is future. This hasn't happened yet.
Oh, okay.
Atlantis probably went down in the flood of Noah. That's probably where that went.
All right.
But let me just talk about the Jews. There's scores of prophecies that said the Jews would be kicked out of Palestine and Israel. They would be scattered to the four corners of the world, and everywhere they go, they would be despised and hated and persecuted. And in 70 AD, a fellow called Titus, a Roman general, went in to put down an insurrection. He slaughtered about 1 million Jews. The rest were scattered to the four corners of the world, hence the wandering Jew. Everywhere they've gone, they've been hated and persecuted, which culminated in the Holocaust in Germany in the Second World War. But there's dozens of other prophecies that said in the last days, in the last generation, that Yahweh, our God, would regather Israel and establish them in Palestine again, and he would do this as a sign to the rest of the nations that we were in the last days, the last throw of the dice, as it were.
And that could
now
be
the Jews
kicker.
They're back there since 1948. There's 5.5 million of them there now. World peace is contingent upon what happens in that neck of the woods between the Jews and the Palestinians. So when your listeners go home tonight and they switch on the television and they see trouble in Israel between Jews and Arabs, we are watching that prophecy coming to pass. We are the generation. The bad news is the Titanic has gone down. The good news is you don't have to get on it. There's a way out. There's an escape route. There's an alternative. And that's what I provide in my book, The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse.
Was this your way out? I mean, how did you decide, how did you find out how we can save ourselves?
Well, it's written in the scriptures in very, very plain English. We're told several times we are saved from the wrath to come. We are rescued from the wrath to come. It's a bit like this, George. Most people have not heard enough evidence to come to an informed decision. I mean, if I pulled you in off the street and I brought you into a court and I pointed at some guy in the dock and I said, this guy, George, is up for murder. Is he going to... innocent or guilty, you'd say, well, Patrick, you know, I haven't heard the evidence yet.
Exactly. I don't know.
Well, what my book does is provides the evidence. It's like, you know, when you have enough evidence, then you can come to an informed decision, to an informed verdict, and then make up your own mind. That's what I do in my book. And I would implore people to, look, have a read of it. You know, it'll cost you $11 or something on Amazon, or you can buy it in Barnes & Noble, or they'll get it for you, or any bookstore if you order it. And... Or by the way, you can buy it from my website too, and I will sign it and dedicate a copy and send it to you. And it's less than $20 for that. And I would say, listen to the evidence. Have a look at it. You know, I'm passionate. I want people to have an opportunity to see what's coming down the tracks, because it's not a very pretty sight. What's going to happen, it's going to end up in a valley in northern Israel called the Valley of Megiddo. And it talks about an army, 200 million from the east. The literal translation is the kings of the sun rising. They're going to lead an army of 200 million from the east.
It's got to be from China.
Absolutely. They already have an army of 200 million.
And by the way, did you hear the story today that I led my program with before you came on? Of course, you probably didn't hear it because you're in Ireland. But
that's right.
The Chinese have said that if we interfere with Taiwan and whatever they plan to do, and if we take action of trying to stop them, so it sounds like they're ready to do something, that they will send nukes against the United States. They said they're prepared to lose all their cities to take out all ours. It almost sounds like a suicide mission, and they're dead serious.
They're also rattling their sabers at Japan.
Yes.
You don't have riots in China unless they're organized by the government. Listen, what we're seeing now with the wars, rumors of wars, famines, earthquakes, diseases, etc., the Jews are back in Israel, are what I call the shadows of the apocalypse. You know, the world is a time bomb whose fuse has long since been lit. And the hoofbeats of the four horsemen of the apocalypse are clearly to be heard by all those who have ears to hear. As I keep saying, the writing is on the wall. You don't want to be there. The bad news is the Titanic has gone down. The good news is you don't want to get on it. In fact, this apocalypse period is supposed to last 7 years long. By the end of it, by the time these 200 guys, million army from the east, are met in this valley in northern Israel by a huge military and powerful Western power under the leadership of this guy called the Antichrist. And there's a sort of a Mexican standoff. And then it says in Revelation 16, it says, then they gathered the kings together in the place that in Hebrew was called Armageddon. Then there came flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, and a severe earthquake. It says, no earthquake has ever occurred while man has been on earth. So tremendous was the quake. The great city split into three parts, and the cities of the nations collapsed. Now, you have to understand, George, when John wrote this, he was in his 90s. He could only describe things in terms of his own vocabulary and his own understanding. And what he saw was flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, and a severe earthquake. I believe he was describing missiles firing off, flashes of lightning, just like we've seen when we've seen pictures of bombing in Baghdad.
Explosions.
We hear rumblings. We hear peals of thunder from the huge cannons firing, and what he called a severe earthquake. And he said, the great city split into three parts, and the cities of the nations collapsed. He called it a great earthquake because he saw all these cities falling down, because the word nuclear strike was not in his vocabulary, George. You know, and I know, and your listeners know, there's only one thing that's going to make all the cities of the nations collapse at the same time, and that is a nuclear strike.
Absolutely.
And that is Armageddon. And what you're seeing with China and with Iraq and with all these other wars and pogroms that are going on all over the place, these are the shadows of the apocalypse, you know?
And it seems to be happening fast, too, Patrick.
Yes, and things happen very fast. Look how fast the Berlin Wall came down. Look at how fast, you know, the Twin Towers went up. Everything was going along swimmingly. Boom, it all happened. So the writing's on the wall. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know whether it's 1 year, 5 years, or 25 years. I believe it's soon. By the way, the powers that be don't want you to know what's in my book. They don't want you to read this book, the Nephilim and these dark powers. All our lives, George, we've been treated like mushrooms. You know, keep them in the dark, feed them manure. But what my book does is shines a light on these guys again. It shows you that, hey, you don't have to be part of this coming apocalypse. There's a way out. And that's what I provide in my book.
I'm beginning to wonder, Patrick, if the Nephilim, those that may still be on this planet, may have already gotten out. Maybe they're the Illuminati. It's very possible. Stay with us. Okay, now we'll open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to talk with our guest, Patrick Caron. Also, I've got to talk with him about the Antichrist. We've got to get that down. So fire away. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.